Hello, everyone. Welcome to New Consciousness, New World. This is your host, Esperanza Theray, and today we have a wonderful show for you. Before we get started and introduce you to our guest, let me just say that next week we also have an incredible show. We're going to have a guest with us. Her name is Angelica Whitecliffe, and she's going to be talking about Brazo, who's an incredible healer from Croatia, and it's going to be an powerful, powerful program. I'll be putting more about that on my social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. So for now, let's go ahead and get started with our guests, and that way we... Hello, Michael.
Yes, hi, Esperanza. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I wanted to introduce our audience to Michael Sala. And Michael, there's so many things about you that I don't think I can do you justice. So would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what you're going to be talking about?
Sure, Esperanza. Well, I was a professor at a university in the Washington, D.C. area. I was teaching in the School of International Service, and that was an appointment I had from 1996 up until 2001. I was an assistant professor. And then in 2001, I got to see a video presentation of the Disclosure Project press conference that was held at the Washington, D.C. press club that Dr. Stephen Greer had organized, and I can say that that really did change my life in some important ways because it gave me answers to questions that I had been asking for some time, given that my background was in international peace and conflict resolution. I was always interested in what is it that can help resolve conflicts around the world, what can create peaceful conditions. And so those were the sort of questions I had, and I couldn't really answer them using the conventional methods that I was exposed to as a professor and doing field work. And so when I saw that Disclosure Project press conference, it really opened up a whole new world. Literally, it introduced to me a way of understanding what is happening around us, which is truly otherworldly. So that was something that really got my attention. Unfortunately, the university was not interested in this new direction in my research, and so that unfortunately led to a break a few years later. And
right.
Ever since, I have been working in this field of exopolitics, which is studying the political implications of extraterrestrial life, and that is something that I continue to do to this moment.
Yeah. It's interesting that once you step a little bit out of the box in your interest and in your research and your life dedication, it's interesting how the scientific community or the traditional educational systems are not too interested. I know Dr. Hertog, who you talk about in one of your papers, had this similar experience as well. So I just started laughing because I know exactly what you mean, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can at some level identify a little bit with that. But it's interesting, yes. So how did you basically you stopped everything? What I mean, obviously you dedicated yourself to what you're currently doing. I know the word is exopolitics. Can you tell us exactly what that means? I'm familiar with the word politics, as I'm sure most of our listeners are, but I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with the word exopolitics. So if that's the direction you want to go on, or unless there's something else you would like to add, can you tell us about that?
Sure, Esperanza. Well, exopolitics was something that I helped develop as a field, and the concept simply is based on something that had been done years earlier by NASA, and that was that they used the prefix exo for describing biological organisms that have an otherworldly or extraterrestrial origin. So the field of exobiology, that term was first used in around the 1960s, and NASA actually had an ongoing study in exobiology for many years after that. So exobiology was a term used to describe the science of biology as it concerns extraterrestrial life. And I saw that and realized that, well, this is something entirely analogous with the field of politics. So if we want to talk about the politics of extraterrestrial life, then we would use the term exopolitics. Similarly, if we wanted to talk about the kind of legal aspects of extraterrestrial life, we would use a term like exolaw or something like that. So the prefix exo simply was used to describe something that pertains to extraterrestrial life as it involves that particular field. So that's how the term exopolitics for me first got my interest, and that was why I promoted it very strongly when I got involved in this field and have been doing that ever since.
So it could be anything that's outside of our world, basically.
Well, that's the way the prefix exo has been used most often. So, for
right.
example, a more recent expression or term that has been used more and more and is covered by the media is exoplanets. And what that refers to is planets that are outside of our solar system. So the exo there is used in the more conventional Greek terminology of something outside of. So if we're talking about, you know, something outside of our world, you know, we would talk about, say, exopolitics.
Right.
Something outside of our solar system, we would talk about exoplanets.
Mm-hmm. Or so, external. External, too, would be another aspect of it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think the Greek term would be kind of outside of,
okay.
you know, the prefix, as the Greeks used it.
Okay. Now, you talk about reading this paper. Is this what led you to the exopolitics, or was there other things that happened? Because I know you wrote several papers, which I have read a few of them before the interview, but you also have a bunch of books.
Well, if I understood your question correctly, how did I get involved in writing in this field and researching this field? For me, I saw that press conference in May of 2001, and for the next 18 months or so, I basically read as much as I could on the field of extraterrestrial life, on the field of higher consciousness, planetary ascension, all of these topics that kind of were of interest to me because I thought that they were all interrelated in some way. And so that was what I did. And then in 2003, in January 2003, I decided that I would basically commit myself to the field of exopolitics so that I was really open to pursuing a new direction in my research, that what I was previously doing at the university, that no longer kind of held my interest. Not that I'm uninterested in international peace and conflict resolution, it was just the methods that I was using to promote those things were not something that were working, in my opinion. So I was looking at other things, such as question of extraterrestrial life, higher consciousness, planetary ascension, all of these topics that, to my mind, might help create a more peaceful world. So I was looking at those, exploring those, and then in January of 2003, I decided that this field of exopolitics would be something that would be most satisfying in terms of achieving my long-term vision of creating a more peaceful, harmonious planet. And so that's how I got involved. And my very first paper was called The Need for Exopolitics. That was published on Martin Luther King Day back in January of 2003. And since that time, I've written several hundred papers that I make available on my website for free so people can read them. At exopolitics.org, just go along and read any of my papers. And I've got a few DVD videos that people can watch as well for free online. And then I have a couple of books and DVDs that are for sale as well, so people can support this work by buying books or DVDs through the website.
Right. And also understand a little bit of what this is about. Great. Now, but the paper itself, the paper that you read from Dr. Gray, correct? Go ahead.
I'm not familiar with that name, Dr. Gray.
You said you had, that's what I understood over the radio. Maybe I misunderstood. The gentleman who wrote the paper that changed your life.
No, that was Dr. Greer.
Greer,
he organized
my apologies.
A press conference. Okay. That, mm-hmm. There were 22 witnesses that spoke at the National Press Club back in May of 2001. He organized a press conference, and when I saw that, that's what changed my life, that so many people were speaking about this cover-up, because up until that time, even though I believed extraterrestrial life existed out there, I didn't realize that there was this kind of a cover-up going on that mm-hmm. extensively. And so when these people spoke about it, I realized that there were very credible people that were going on the record saying that there was indeed a cover-up of extraterrestrial life visiting our world. And so that was something that I realized would be a field of research that deserved a lot of investigation, a lot of time, and that's how I got committed to that.
Right. Yeah, that's powerful. And you transitioned. Was that a gradual transition from what the work you did before and what you're currently doing to find your path per se, because obviously your experience changed you. However, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for us all to be able to transition to what we really deep down in our hearts are trying to do or feel that we're called to do.
Yeah, I actually would call it more of an evolution. I don't think there has been a real transition for me. There's been more of an evolution, because I'm still interested in international peace and conflict resolution and what is it that needs to be done to resolve conflicts around the world and make for a more peaceful planet. Those are things that I'm still interested in. What changed was that rather than being focused on nation states and ethnic groups in different countries and how nation states dealt with these ethnic groups, which was my area of interest up until 2001, I then became interested in the bigger question of extraterrestrial life. You know, how is extraterrestrial life impacting on politics around the world? And you know, we need to understand this. And so for me, this was a natural evolution. But what made it very difficult was that there was a lot of opposition within the university, that my university superiors were very opposed to me going down this direction. From the period 2001, May of 2001, up until April of 2004, I tried to tread warily. I tried not to go too far out in terms of my advocacy of this field of exopolitics, and try not to do something that would compromise my position at the university. But at the end of the day, the university just was not open and not receptive to this. So that led to me being basically forced out of the university. I was my position was terminated. The program that I was trying to develop was basically cut without any input from me. So it was a pretty sudden change. But the university was definitely opposed to this research, and so that really did create a lot of difficulty in trying to evolve my own thoughts, my own methods in terms of how this extraterrestrial question impacts on global politics.
Well, I would say it's not just in the scientific community. Obviously, you experienced it because of your work within that. But I even find it today that it's more common understanding that there is a belief in extraterrestrial existence that people are still, at least a lot of people I know, still do not believe and think you're totally nuts when you mention extraterrestrial existence. I mean, they're saying, oh, well, you know, I don't know about that. I don't know if I believe it. I don't know if I agree with any of that. You know, they're not even open-minded, let alone willing to accept it. Which brings me to a point in that I found very interesting based on what you just said, that after the NASA Kepler mission, there was where it talks about the announcement and discovery of exoplanets in habitable regions in distant solar systems. It went basically, the scientific community went from being skeptic to the opposite, a certain level of certainty that there is life on other planets. So would you say that that belief has changed a lot or not really?
Well, that's a really important point, that what's happened is that we are witnessing a scientific revolution, if you like.
Where all of
a sudden, it's okay to talk about extraterrestrial life and the possibilities of extraterrestrial life and what this means for our world. This was something up until the discovery of exoplanets, something that was not at all supported. But with the discovery of exoplanets, the confirmation that they exist, the confirmation that some of these planets exist in the habitable region, it's now turned the question of, well, does extraterrestrial life exist out there, from a hypothetical to a very definitive yes, that extraterrestrial life almost certainly exists out there. In other words, statistics would make it, as I said, almost certain that extraterrestrial life exists out there. Just because of the sheer number of planets and the sheer number of solar systems in our galaxy alone. And so many scientists are now openly discussing what are the implications of extraterrestrial life, what are the scientific implications, what are the social implications, and conferences have actually been organized on these issues. So we've had some very prestigious organizations start conferences that have dealt with specifically this question of what are the societal implications of extraterrestrial life, where they look at the most recent scientific research into exoplanets, how these exoplanets are habitable or not, and how far they are and so forth, these sorts of questions, and then scientists are willing to discuss the implications of this. And no less than the world's foremost astrophysicist, Stephen Hawking, has actually come out and kind of led the charge in this regard. I mean, very soon after the very first readings from the Kepler mission, where basically the Kepler telescope confirmed that, yes, there are quite a number of exoplanets out there, those very first results, shortly after that in 2009, Stephen Hawking came out basically saying that extraterrestrial life almost certainly exists out there, and that we can really make the assumption, or that it would be fair to assume, that they would be most likely to be hostile or predatory in nature. Stephen Hawking was kind of looking at the evolution of civilizations on our planet and how we have evolved out of a kind of predatory colonial history. That in Stephen Hawking's position, this would be the same for how extraterrestrial civilizations would evolve, that they would go through a similar cycle, and that it would be very likely that extraterrestrial civilizations would be predatory in nature, just as the colonial powers during the kind of 18th, 19th century and so forth were very colonial in how they interacted with developing civilizations throughout the world. So to Earth is at risk, according to Hawking, from these more evolved predatory extraterrestrial civilizations whose evolution would make them more than likely to view Earth as a place of vast resources that could be kind of plundered.
Well, yes, I suppose if you do compare it to our history, that would be the conclusion. But I don't think necessarily, because even in our history, there have been, granted, in some cases, there have been good and bad in both the process. So we can't just assume everything is going to be negative, but we're going by our own background and you know, other civilizations don't necessarily have to evolve in the same manner that we did. They could. Now, that brings us to my next point. You talk about it, the extraterrestrials being friendly or non-friendly. So I guess you already touched on that. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I know you've done a lot of studying on these topics, and what you talk about is a lot about the White Brotherhood. I know them basically as the Elder Brothers because of the fact that they've been in existence much more than we have, and our time frame of evolution compared to this, we would be, you know, very young in our evolution, and they are much more evolved, and therefore, I have always known them as either the White Brotherhood or the Brotherhood of Light or the Elder Brothers was how I was introduced to them. So please feel free to elaborate a little bit more on that and what your understanding is about that.
Well, the first thing that we need to keep in mind is that what I was just talking about a few minutes ago in terms of scientific interest in the possibility of extraterrestrial life and what the consequences would be, mm-hmm. That is all based on kind of more speculative data, making a lot of assumptions about what extraterrestrial life would be like out there. Now, mm-hmm. of course, we also have, you know, a vast amount of literature. Many, many people have had experiences with extraterrestrial life here on this planet Earth, and of course, that is a body of literature that the scientific community is just not interested in. So, so we need to kind of separate that, that the scientific community are only interested in the kind of more speculative aspects of, you know, what it means to have exoplanets existing out there. And you do have within that body of literature, you do have both friendly and unfriendly. I already mentioned Stephen Hawking. What I didn't mention was that the Vatican also came out around the same time as Stephen Hawking saying that extraterrestrials are likely to be our brothers, that they're likely to be slightly more ethically evolved than us, and that they are, in the evolutionary scale of things, at a higher level than humans, that they have risen beyond original sin, for example, but they have not reached the point of requiring salvation, which would make the kind of Christ experience that the Catholic Church advocates something that would be unique to the Earth, which is why they do that. But nevertheless, the Vatican, a few outspoken Vatican officials have come out, and no less than the chief Vatican astronomer, Gabriel Funes, has come out saying that, in fact, extraterrestrials, if they exist out there, that they would likely be our brothers. And so that's the more positive aspect of what extraterrestrial would be like out there. But again, Gabriel Funes, along with others in the Vatican, are basing their assumptions on that kind of more speculative set of data that comes from the study of exoplanets and the consequences of extraterrestrial life. What you were just mentioning about the Elder Brothers, well, we've had a lot of people that have come forward with contact experiences where they've been introduced to extraterrestrials, and the extraterrestrials themselves have then introduced these people to ascended masters or, as you were saying, Elder Brothers. And that's something that is of great interest to me, because I thought it was really very, very interesting that you would have these advanced extraterrestrial beings coming to our world using these technologies, flying saucers and spaceships and so forth, and that they would arrive here, that they would meet people, they would expose these people, contactees as they're generally known, expose these contactees to the advanced technologies of the extraterrestrials, show them some of the sites in the local solar system, take them to planets like Mars or the Moon and so forth, many reports of this, give them kind of a lot of information that they could use. And then finally, one of the things that I noticed in a few of these cases was that they would introduce these contactees to these beings of higher consciousness, whether you call them the Ascended Masters, the Great White Brotherhood, or the Elder Brothers, Masters of Wisdom, as they're called sometimes. Basically, what they were talking about was beings who embody a higher degree of consciousness and through their higher consciousness are able to manipulate space-time in the same way that extraterrestrials are able to do so through technology. And that is one of the things that is of great interest to me, that there is this these beings that seem to monitor or work in parallel or in tandem with extraterrestrials. As extraterrestrials interact with humans physically, you also have these great white brothers or ascended masters interacting with humans and interacting with the ETs in parallel to kind of, as I've seen it, the way I my conclusion is that they do it to keep balance. They want to make sure that we don't go too far down the wrong track of maybe getting so enamored with technology that we forget about our spiritual development. But this seems to be what these ascended beings are trying to do, or these celestials, as I call them in a couple of my papers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up a really important point, because in my book, Hope Reigns Beyond 2012, I address a lot of the issues. And with one of the issues, which, sometimes when we focus on extraterrestrials, we don't take into account is the ascension in the evolution of man to what is coming up, the fifth dimension. My understanding is that we will be able to utilize our mind. We will not have need for technology at all. And it would make it much easier for us, because we could manifest things with a thought. And I describe that a little bit in the book. This is just a summary of four books more that I'm supposed to write, but it talks about that, the human mind, the human potential, that it's been neglected so much, that is the ultimate tool to accomplish everything we need. And my understanding is, from my experience with extraterrestrials, is that's exactly what they use. Their technology is more organic and biological than it is mechanical. So the only purpose really for them needing spaceships would be to maintain themselves around our planet, around us, because they can manifest anything with thoughts, and they can, move through space in an instant. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that we are in the process of the ascension. I also understand that they're extremely involved. At least the higher levels of extraterrestrials are very much involved in the ascension process, and they are assisting. And I know you have information on that as well. So it is to their interest that we evolve, because they need us to come into the fold. We're all in this together, per se, even though they are much more advanced. So it's interesting that you're bringing all of this up, because I think it is very important. And it's precisely at this time, a very important time for humanity, where we are going through a quantum leap in consciousness, that all of this is coming together for our process and the ascension and our rebirth. One other thing I wanted to touch upon, you talk about interesting concept, and I don't know if you have ever considered it from this perspective. You talk about the extraterrestrials, living in with what we call the ascended masters. I don't know if it has ever occurred to a lot of people that these ascended masters could actually be extraterrestrials, and they're coming to Earth to help us in this ascension process. For example, if you think about the Bible, when it talks about Mary being taken in a chariot of fire, what would that, in those days, that would be the best description that they could think of. But if we were to talk about that probably in today's time, we would probably maybe refer to it as a spaceship. I mean, that's an interesting concept, and very much in accordance with what you're saying.
Well, yes, it is a very important point that the extraterrestrial phenomenon, from its earliest inception, has always been associated with these very profound spiritual experiences that people have had. And in my kind of research, what I've found is that the more evolved extraterrestrial races, that they are in fact led by these ascended beings. That these beings who have been able to master consciousness to the extent where they can do things that we would consider to be kind of phenomenal, you know, being able to manipulate space-time, teleportation, telepathy, all of those sorts of things, the more evolved extraterrestrials, once they reach a point of becoming ascended masters, that the society in which they operate in, if it's a more kind of evolved society, recognize them for being inherently wise, inherently able to offer leadership and direction, and so they actually do become leaders. So, for example, on the Earth, as I'm sure you are aware or your listeners are aware, you've had many people talk about ascended masters, you know, living in the Himalayas, living in the Andes, because that's where they can operate without being too polluted, and also because society just doesn't accept them. That if an ascended master walks into the White House, for example, I mean, he'd be arrested for trespassing, because this is the consciousness of our society. So our society has still not reached the level where we can accept or respect people or individuals who have reached these very high levels of consciousness. Religions do. Religions respect them as masters, as gurus, as great teachers, but our scientific world doesn't accept beings who have reached these higher levels of consciousness yet. But extraterrestrial civilizations do, and so this is a very big difference in terms of our society and extraterrestrial societies, which is why I've noticed again and again when I've been looking at contactees and how they interact with extraterrestrials, that the extraterrestrials ultimately, not in all cases, but in many cases, will introduce the contactee to one of their masters of wisdom, as they call them, and pointing out that this being, this master of wisdom, does embody the highest knowledge, the highest cosmic knowledge that is known to them, and is in fact, if not their kind of political leader, at least their spiritual leader. And mm-hmm. So this is a very important point to keep in mind, that this is something that we see with modern contactee reports today, and also going back into history, as you were referring to those chariots of fire and the role of these angels in helping some of the prophets in the Old Testament get insight and experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely a very interesting subject, and I'm definitely been also changed by all of this. It's interesting that my spiritual process started through meditation, and it was through that meditation that I also connected with these extraterrestrials, and they were part of my initiation into spirituality. So it seems very much hand in hand. And very much interconnected, because how we evolve as races does affect the rest of the universe. It affects the galaxy. It affects everything. And of course, I would be concerned if I were a higher being, I would be concerned as to someone, how another planet is evolving, and given the fact that they're not as limited as we are by their bodies, their physical bodies. They can definitely be more integrated. My understanding, too, is as we ascend, we will have a different level of consciousness, which will be able to hold more light. And my understanding is we will be connected to the Christ consciousness, even the God consciousness, because we are, I mean, Jesus, which in reality his name was Yeshua, was very much in oneness with God. I mean, he says, my Father and I are one. And obviously, this is a very important concept to understand. If we're all in that mentality, then we're all interconnected. There's no longer, as we ascend in the fifth dimension, there's no longer any separation between us and God. There's no separation between us and the people who have passed. There's no separation any longer between us and other highly evolved races that are out there. So it would make sense that they would be wanting to contact and connect with us. How would the ex-politics perspective, or what, I guess my question is, we're talking about the exopolitics as a way of the future, but the connection's already happening. How is it happening or helping us today with these extraterrestrial experiences? How is exopolitics impacting the world, or vice versa? How is the world, the already what's happening out there, the extraterrestrial connections, how is that impacting the development of this new science?
Well, I think the biggest contribution that people involved in the exopolitics field have made is that they have helped bring out the truth of our planetary condition, that we are not alone, that there are other civilizations from distant worlds interacting with us, other beings from different dimensional layers interacting with us, and so forth. That, you know, this is a lot of information that has been suppressed or ridiculed. And as a consequence, it means that our evolution as a species has been stunted. You know, for example, we still continue to use fossil fuels. We still continue to use this kind of material, oil, coal, that is buried in under the ground, and we use that as our primary energy supply. And really, we are putting so much effort into having these resources mined and kind of shipped over to different places that have a need for this kind of energy. And it keeps us locked into a very competitive mind frame, because we say that, well, oil is a limited resource, there's only certain places on the planet which has it, and, you know, those places are very prized locations, and so this is often a reason for why there is war and so forth. And so this is just one example of how, if we were able to introduce this body of knowledge that there are extraterrestrial civilizations out there visiting us from distant worlds, very clearly they would not be using oil, they would not be using coal to fuel their spaceships to travel from distant star systems. They are using another energy source. So very quickly, the first thing that would be changed would be that people would start to look at, well, what are the energy sources that extraterrestrials use? And once they recognize that this is an energy source that can be, that is freely available, it would transform our world, it would transform our consciousness. It would, you know, the biggest transformation that would happen in my mind would be, what would happen if, rather than relying on some external energy source, that every home had its own energy supply that was unlimited. So you wouldn't be locked into a power grid. You wouldn't live in fear of what would happen if I didn't go out there and work so I could pay my bills, so you have the capability at home to produce as much energy as you like for your needs. And so that would give you a lot more leisure time. That would give you the means to be able to improve yourself, raise your consciousness. And this to my mind would be some of the biggest benefits of what would happen once we have contact with extraterrestrials becoming open knowledge, open source. And exopolitics helps contribute to that, because ultimately, as this information does become common knowledge, these technologies will come online, this higher knowledge will become available, and I think our world would change dramatically.
I agree with you 100%. However, there is one factor that you kind of didn't touch upon, and I think it's very important, and it's what's keeping us stuck, and the greed factor. There's too much money invested already in these forms of energy. We do have already people who have grown leaps and bounds, who have discovered sources of energy, maybe not to the level, of course, of the extraterrestrials, because we're not there yet. However, I do believe what you're saying is true, that the fact that the more contact we have with these extraterrestrials, people are just going to be transformed by this connection more and more. And it's going to help us to push, these beliefs out of the picture, regardless of how, some organizations are very much invested in them. And it will be what is best for humanity as opposed to what's best for a few. So yeah, that's definitely true. I think that they will help us to see a bigger picture, because I don't think some of these people where the greed is involved know what they're going to be doing to get their cut of the pie. Maybe their picture so small that they can't see that they could be doing so much more, because they wouldn't need a piece of the pie. They could have so much more. But again, that's the negative side of why we're still stuck, I think.
You brought up an important point. Now, greed is definitely a powerful motivator, but it hasn't stopped us in the past from overcoming that. For example, slavery. Slavery was something that was an institution that was respected, and the Bible actually talked about slavery in terms of how to look after slaves. So, people took that as being kind of divinely sanctioned support for a practice and institution that we recognize today as being totally immoral. But it was something that was respected for a long time and practiced for a long time, and the ultimate force behind it was greed, that you would possess another human being as your property, and that when people began to wake up and see this as being very immoral, the factor that kind of was cited most often was greed, that people would not give up slaves, because how could you pay for them? And we had a civil war in the United States where, southern slave owners would point out, well, who's going to pay for the freedom of the slaves? I mean, this is, for many landholders, it was like this was, all of their money was tied up in the ownership of slaves. And so ultimately a war was fought and the slaves were freed. And so this is, so greed is definitely a powerful force to kind of lock us into a self-limiting set of beliefs, but ultimately the rising consciousness overtakes that, and then eventually, whether there'll actually have to be a war fought over disclosure, hopefully it won't.
Yes.
But certainly there is the potential for those that profit from the current system in terms of, say, the dependency on oil, say pharmaceuticals. That's another area that, if extraterrestrial knowledge was disseminated, the pharmaceutical industry would collapse overnight. These are areas of tremendous greed. Oil, big pharmacies. I mean, these are areas that would be very difficult for certain groups, billionaires and so forth, to just relinquish those profits and allow extraterrestrial knowledge to come about. But that is our destiny, and I think just as slavery was doomed to fail, so too this the secrecy of extraterrestrial visitation, that will ultimately fail as well. And hopefully it'll be done without there having to be a war, and it'll be done just through people's rising consciousness.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't stop evolution regardless of the facts that, no matter how much of an effort, you can try to slow evolution down to an extent. So you're right. I mean, there's no stopping evolution regardless of who is behind or what's the cause. Ultimately, man has no choice but to evolve. I mean, that's just the constant. However, those are some of the things that we're having to address, and I think that's probably one of the greatest challenges, because greed is one, but along with greed comes the desire for power, and obviously, we live in the information age, so knowledge is the most powerful thing right now. And the fact that this stuff is being kept, this information is being kept from us, is a source, a sort of a form of control, a source of power, and desire to utilize what is known for, you know, the advantage of a few, or to control it for the advantage of a few. I mean, that's also part of, but these are things we do have to let go. So I agree with you that this can only slow us down a little bit. It can never stop us. And you have to move forward and fight. And well, when I mean fight is mean, I don't necessarily mean the war thing. I'm referring to, you know, you have to move forward and you have to work at things, because I found an interesting acronym. It's called FREEDOM. But it's an acronym. It's not the word, or actually the word free. Freedom requires everyday effort. It's not, you know, it's not something that just happens out of the blue. It just doesn't fall out of the sky. We need to put our, you know, our effort into it as well. So yeah, 100% agree with you on that. What other things would you like to share with the audience about exopolitics? Because I'm trying, I guess, to see if the audience can really understand if they were to get involved or to become more knowledgeable. How could that, at an individual level, help us, and how could it help as a, at a more larger scale? Because I also noticed that you are you participated a lot in the World Congress, which is a congress for peace. Would you like to share a little bit about that as well?
Okay, well, I think the biggest thing that most people, the hurdle that they face, is just the amount of information that exists out there on the issue of extraterrestrial life, not all of which is very credible. And so it makes it incredibly difficult for people to find out what is really happening out there. If you have that desire to find out what is really going on, it is very, very hard, simply because the sources are just so divergent in terms of how credible they are. Uh-huh. You have some really good sources, solid, reliable sources, and then you have a lot of unreliable sources. So this is one of the questions that people have to deal with. So, for example, at this very moment, people who may have noticed that there are a number of sources that are talking about ongoing wars in the Pacific Ocean and the Antarctic Ocean involving extraterrestrials, hostile extraterrestrials, and the U.S. Navy and a coalition of naval powers such as China, Korea, Japan, assisting the United States in these battles in the Pacific Ocean against these so-called hostile extraterrestrials. Well, you know, when you see reports like that, the first question that comes to mind is, well, you know, how credible is that? Well, you need to understand that there are different sources in terms of how reliable they are. And so the field of exopolitics helps people to identify what are the more reliable sources. Now, how can we differentiate between different whistleblower sources? You know, which whistleblowers are more likely to be telling us the truth as opposed to those that might be part of a disinformation program? There's also a need to understand that this is a field that, since the 1950s, has been very heavily saturated with intelligence organizations trying to spin things in a way that would keep people in the dark. So people have to be aware that the field of exopolitics is not something clear-cut. It's not like doing, say, conventional politics, where you know pretty much what people are doing because they say it's covered by CNN or Fox News or something, and then you're able to understand, well, you know, President Obama is doing this or doing that, and because this is what the media is saying. And that when it comes to the field of exopolitics, there are different layers, and all of these layers hide things that are important for understanding the big picture, but which those who are in control try to keep from the general public. So in the field of exopolitics, we try to kind of go down deeper and deeper into the different layers by which the truth is hidden. So we go into the world of, say, compartmentalized programs. You know, how do compartmentalized programs work? You know, how is it that the secrets can be kept not only from the American public, but also from people in positions of authority, say in Congress, the general media, and even the president, even the United States president can be kept in the dark. So these are all process questions, all about how is this secrecy managed? And so those are the sort of things that exopolitics help introduce people to. But it does require a lot of time. It's not an easy read. I have two books that people can buy and read through those. And even if you read those books from cover to cover, there's still just so much more information that needs to be looked at. So it really is a vast amount of information. It definitely takes a few years of study, so it's not an easy field. So anyone that's serious about exopolitics really needs to understand that this is something that's going to take a lot of time, a lot of digging, a lot of investigation, a lot of reading, and eventually you'll be able to understand the basic parameters of what's going on.
It's not exactly, is it already considered a field of science or not yet?
Not quite yet. There's no university that yet recognizes the field of exopolitics. There is still no scientific conferences that have branches that deal with the field of exopolitics. So it is still something that is happening kind of in these alternative conferences or in, say, non-mainstream journals such as the Exopolitics Journal. But the thing is that the term exopolitics, just like exobiology, just like exoplanets, it's a descriptive functional term. It describes a field of politics that pertains to something outside of conventional politics. So the term exopolitics does by itself ultimately open the door to mainstream scientists examining the question of extraterrestrial life and what would be the political side of things. But to answer your question, it hasn't yet been accepted by conventional scientists.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking, that even though it is a new field of study, it's not recognized as an individual, independent, and self-standing field in itself. Maybe as a subfield to something else, that may be the case, but yeah, I can understand that it's a complex process. My understanding is you've participated and are maybe member of the World Congress for World Peace. Is that the correct name, or am I mislabeling it, I guess?
Okay, I think you might be talking about a conference which is organized annually in Turkey, Istanbul, Turkey. It's called the World Peace Congress.
Okay.
Basically, it's an organization that was established by a Turkish contactee. Her name is Bülent Korak. Mm-hmm. And she's written a book called The Book of Knowledge, which is all about her experiences with these different extraterrestrial groups and the knowledge that they gave us or gave her to help prepare humanity for the day when contact becomes open, where people learn that we are no longer alone. And so this organization hosts these annual conferences on the 1st of November in Istanbul, Turkey, where they are promoting world peace, cosmic brotherhood, and the idea that we are not alone.
Okay. I knew I had read this somewhere. I just wasn't sure if I remembered the name of it correctly. Have you also participated with your topic in this conference as well?
Yes, I did I presented last year in November 2011. I presented a paper on celestials and how they are helping us prepare for extraterrestrial contact. And that actually is a video that you can watch online. That presentation was recorded and it is available for online viewing. You'll just go to my website, and if you scroll through my various posts, you will eventually see the post where the video is made available for free, so people can just watch it and see what I had to say and learn a little bit about that World Peace Congress there in Istanbul.
How did you, I guess my question, this is meant for our audience, and if they wanted to know more about and participate, or not necessarily present, but maybe attend or learn more about this conference and what's going on, because the information is more reliable than what you might find in the mainstream out there. How did you become involved with it, or did they hear about you and they invited you? Could you tell us a little bit about that and how we as normal people could help or facilitate the process that's intended in this Congress, this World Peace Congress?
Well, I was just an invited speaker. Mm-hmm. They just learned about my work and they invited me to come and do a presentation on the topic of exopolitics and how that can help us prepare for contact. And so that's when I went there and met them for the first time. It's an organization which is based primarily in Istanbul, Turkey, so it may be that it's not something that maybe most of your American listeners would be able to easily attend.
Right.
But there's no great need to do so, because this is information that you can get online. There are many different places where you can go to get information about extraterrestrial life, about creating world peace and so forth. One place I would recommend is earthtransformation.com. That's the website we created to put out information concerning how to transform the Earth by introducing this knowledge of extraterrestrial life and to create a more peaceful, harmonious planet. So there, if you go to earthtransformation.com, there's a number of links to past conferences that have been held, papers, videos, and so forth that are available. So you can go there. And, of course, my website, exopolitics.org, everything that I have put out there or ever been involved in, there's always some notice or some article that's on the exopolitics.org website that you can find out about.
Right. Well, I guess the one of the focuses that I was trying to address also in the question was, which you've answered primarily, but one of the things I'm still curious about, you are leading you and these people that are organizing and doing presentations and things like that are kind of leading the progress or the future of our planet. And how can we to help? Because you know there's power in large groups. So how can we be involved to help push this forward? You are the leaders, you are the scientists presenting and sharing the information that you research. We as the people, we must be able to do, we must need to do something or to support in some way so that this work can be moved forward, because the more people that are involved in it, you know, the more we can do. Is there any way that we can get involved, whether it be through a Congress or through other organizations? For example, you have the exopolitics.org. Would people be able to influence by becoming members of your organization? Would they be able to, obviously with your journals, they could be more informed. But I'm just wondering if you're at the level where you are already trying to help organize the people into moving forward and helping support you to lead the movement of the exopolitics and leading the movement to opening up. Because a lot of countries, some countries have already shared and come out publicly, their governments, their military, they come up with information on what is really going on. The U.S. has not done that yet. So is there a way that we can be involved to help this process along?
Well, definitely. And that's a really good question, Esperanza. The way people can help is to really just allow their interest in this field to grow, to read the material, to become active. You know, it might be as simple as just joining one of these discussion forums. We have discussion forums associated with the organization I've created called the Exopolitics Institute. We have a discussion forum. You can join the discussion forums, just share your experiences, talk with others. We have a news site, which is exonews.org. And people can go there and just join and subscribe. It's free, so they don't have to pay anything. And they can read the material and comment. Because I think, to me, the biggest thing that we look for in terms of researchers is to be able to interact with the public. You know, we put our ideas out there, and we look forward to the public interacting with us and saying, okay, yes, well, I saw something similar, or people relating their own experiences, or maybe sharing contacts. Oh, well, I knew a guy that actually was based at a certain Air Force facility at a certain time when something happened of significance. So, you know, when you have people coming together on discussion forums or on news sites, sharing information, talking, then you're building the ground, the route for that issue to become mobilized. Because ultimately what's going to happen is that this whole disclosure issue is going to become something like the civil rights movement. It'll become something where people just cannot live with that, with the knowledge that this information is being kept from them. Just as in the 1950s, 1960s, people suddenly woke up one day and said they cannot live with the knowledge that America is a segregated society, that this is just unacceptable and that they will not allow that to happen. And so people mobilize. And so one day that will happen on this disclosure issue, that people will no longer be able to live with the fact that the government is hiding that we are not alone, that is being from the public, and that'll be mobilized. So to help create the foundations for that, join these news sites, join these discussion forums. If you go to my exopolitics.org site, you can click the Facebook page there, the Twitter link. I have a Facebook and Twitter link. Just join those, and every time I put something out, you'll get it, and that's the way to stay informed.
Yeah, one other thing that I was going to touch on, but then we got sidetracked. So I do want to go back to this because you brought it up again right now, and that is the government cover-up. You talked about that a lot of people in the government don't know a lot about a lot of things. And, you know, like the president doesn't know about a lot of things. The people who are supposed to be in charge of the country, that information is being withheld from them in many ways. And having worked in the classified arena for DOD, not that I'm going to disclose anything classified, but there are, I think we're all aware now that there are what they call the black ops, which at one point not many people knew existed. So we know the you know, organizations that are secret organizations like the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, and so on. However, it's interesting that the black ops are not controlled by anyone, and they don't report to anyone. And whether it's military or whether it's government or whether it's the executive branch or the legislative branch, it does not matter. These organizations are like invisible and only report to themselves. So it is sad that there's nobody to hold these organizations accountable, which is goes against the foundations of this country, really. The whole purpose, the structure of the government that was created here in the United States was intended to avoid exactly this kind of control, this kind of power, where an organization, in this case, it was intended for the governing, the structure of the government, but it really involves any organization that works, that's supposed to be working for the people and in benefit of the country. And those organizations are that they're supposed to be working for the people, but how can they be when nobody is able to tell them what they need to do except within themselves? So it is sad that these organizations do not feel the need to share unless ultimately necessary, and oftentimes can make decisions without, you know, the higher officials knowing about it. So when you mention that the government does not, some of the government does not know, some of the, the president may not know everything that's going on, that just came to mind, and it was like, yeah, that's very true, because these organizations are not controlled. I remember a friend of mine who had a friend that works within these organizations, and the person is works within the military, but he doesn't have to report really to his supposed to be superior. He really has he's deep undercover, so he doesn't need to really report, and whatever is needed is given as a story, a blank story, to cover up whatever he's really doing. And with extraterrestrials, it's a very similar scenario. So, yeah, definitely. it's very sad, and something needs to be done
That's a very important point. And there is a completely different world that operates in the classified world, where secrets are determined in terms of a person's classification level, and if you don't have that clearance, no matter what your position is, you might be the president of the United States, but if you're not cleared for a particular issue, you will not be briefed on it. You will not know what is going on. There's a very famous incident where there was an admiral in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Wilson, and this was something that Dr. Stephen Greer, and astronaut Edgar Mitchell confirmed, that this Admiral Wilson about a classified project that dealt with UFOs. And so they told him about it and said, well, why don't you check it out and find out what you can about this project? So, he was outraged. He thought, this Admiral thought, well, how could there be a project dealing with these issues without me not knowing about it? That he was head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So sure enough, he went out there and he did his research, due diligence, and he found out that indeed there was a classified project dealing with this issue, and he was denied clearance. So this is the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff being denied access to a program that he wasn't cleared for. I mean, this just shows you the extent to which these classified compartmentalized programs have developed a life of their own, where even conventional political and military leaders are kept out of the loop. And so, of course, that brings up the problem that you were mentioning, which is, well, how can you have good policy? How can you have accountability? How can you have transparency if all of this is happening without the knowledge, without oversight of people who are maybe more talented, more gifted to be able to do the kind of work that's needed in these projects, because it's all decided on the basis of secrecy and classification?
Well, and see, that's another point that I wanted to also address, because you're saying unless you have the clearance, even if you do have the clearance, the way it works, and I had a TSSCI, which SCI stands for Special Compartmental Information Access, basically, and you are, as a person, as a worker bee, not as a person in charge, as a worker bee, if you can imagine a desk of drawers, With your SCI, compartmental means you only have access to that special compartment. So in a way to put it so that people can visualize what I'm talking about, I would have access to one drawer, or our project would have access to one drawer. Somebody else in another project might have access to drawer. We have, let's say we have access to drawer A. Someone else has access to drawer B, but we are not allowed to see drawer B, even though we do have clearances. But our clearances is compartmentalized. It's separate, and it's only allowed so that nobody except the people at the very top have an understanding of what's going on. And they may not necessarily be the people at the top of the government, but they are the people at the top of the black ops. So we are not allowed to see all the information. Therefore, even though we have access to some knowledge, we don't know what's going on, really. And that's how they keep the information at times from being leaked out, because you really don't see the full picture. So how can you disclose what you don't know?
That's a very good point.
Yeah. So even with clearances, it's still a very, very convoluted picture, I guess is what I'm trying to say. A lot of people think, oh, you know, if you have this type of clearance, you know this. No, you don't necessarily know. So it's I'm even wondering a lot of times the people who actually have to perform whatever actions or whatever jobs that are told to do that would classify under black ops, if they're even truly knowing if they're working for the right guy or not. Because who's to say that somebody could be, you know, guiding them with their own personal agenda? There's nobody to control those people. So, it becomes a very complex thing. So, I guess from that perspective, exopolitics would help to bring some of this eventually into the light.
Yeah, I think exopolitics is a very important part of this gradual process we're witnessing, where everything becomes more transparent. With the internet now, what we are having is basically unprecedented levels of information sharing, and it's creating a lot more transparency in the way the world operates, the way governments operate. And so what we are witnessing now with the exopolitics movement is that more and more information is being shared, and it's bringing out into the open more of the information that is that has been worked on in these various compartmentalized projects. And eventually what will happen is that we will have just full transparency, as close as we can get to basically all of the secrets being shared. And I think that's when our society will be ready to make the leap from, say, an internet to a fully telepathic society. And that's something that's very exciting. But we're still a few years away from that, but certainly I think there's a potential there for our race, humanity, to evolve, where we go beyond this kind of technological mind integration, if you like, to mm-hmm. something which is more a telepathic net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and I do touch on that. One of the sections in my book is dedicated to the future, but I want to touch up on a word you used, because you use the word telepathy, and telepathy is a limited word for expressing the type of communication that exists at the level of these beings, and also at the level that we are intended to communicate in the fifth dimension. And based on what I've been given, the information that I've had the privilege of receiving, what I understand is it's a form of communication that's called absolute knowledge, because it's not just telepathy. It goes beyond telepathy in the sense that when you actually connect with the mind of another person. And I talk about this in the book, and I describe several situations where it takes place. There is a connectedness between all the beings that exist in the universe, and not just with the beings, but with the planet, with everything that's around us. We're all really interconnected. We are, as human beings, numbed to it, unfortunately. So that's one of the things that's going to change. But not only will you be able to perceive what's in someone else's mind, you will get images that they're trying to communicate. You will get the feeling, the experience, and the intent of what the person is trying to communicate. And the wonderful, incredible, powerful thing about this form of communication, in my understanding, is that there is no miscommunication like we have now with words. Because when you can put yourself in the other person's shoes and understand the communication from that perspective, when you can see the intent in what the person is trying to say, there can no longer be any miscommunication and any misunderstanding. And hopefully, wars will be completely avoided. So I just wanted to touch on that point, because I think it's such an important concept that it's hard. I've experienced it, and it's still very hard to explain and put into regular words and regular terminology. So
I think you're describing something that lies ahead for all of us. We'll probably arrive at that at different speeds, because obviously people are at different levels in terms of their consciousness development, but certainly that kind of absolute knowing, where, and you know, that requires a certain degree of unity too. That that you don't differentiate between you and whatever it is you're tuning into. That you are truly one, and when you are truly one, then there can be absolute knowing. So yeah, I think that's definitely something that lies ahead, and maybe there'll be these intermediate steps where there'll be kind of something like telepathy as it's kind of more conventionally known, and then beyond that there'll be this absolute knowing where one knows with certainty what is happening or what are the thoughts and feelings of another entity, because you have a degree of unity with that being.
Yes, yes. I need to send you a copy of my book, and maybe if God willing, I attend the event that you are having in New York, I would probably, my goal is not only to come but to bring a number of people with me. I would provide you with a copy, but you mentioned in your white paper that there are the wisdom holders, and what they do is they have access to knowledge. Well, that's basically true for some of the people here on the planet. They have access to that knowledge. And in a way, being connected to the grid that exists, the energy grid that exists and connects all things, because we are connected in a similar way that a phone is connected, except we have our phone off the hook. So the connection is there. We just have disconnected from it. And once we are connected, I think that we will have access to a certain level of wisdom, maybe not to the same level that you're referring to for the wisdom keepers or the wisdom holders, but at least to a different level of understanding and knowledge. And you brought that up in the paper, and I thought that was very interesting. Do you want to elaborate a little bit more about that? Or
I think there's a really exciting times that lie ahead for all of us as a species, because as we are successful in breaking through some of these limitations that have been imposed upon us as a society, as things such as free energy are allowed to come forward, and that way our society is able to move forward, then that means that the restraints upon those of us that are more apt or more capable of going to the boundaries of space and time, going to the boundaries of knowledge, that we are free to be able to dive into that and bring back to the rest of society some of these pearls. So, for example, We know that only 97% of DNA is considered junk because there's no ostensible purpose that it serves. But yet we know intuitively that the human body has tremendous abilities, but all of these, the vast majority of these abilities are latent. So
yeah.
If we learn how to tap into the abilities of the body, we can do things like move through space-time. We can do things like go into the Akashic records of a planet, of a solar system, of a galaxy, and dive in and get that information and bring it back to the rest of society. And because, for example, the sun, you know, the sun is a living entity. It has a life force. It has something that we can connect with. We know at a certain level how to connect with the sun, the consciousness of the sun. But we are not trained to do it, and we have great difficulty in making that connection. But with time, with the right training and development, everyone is capable of making a connection with the sun. And as we make that connection, we can tap into the vast wisdom of the sun and the Akashic records that are kept in the sun. And you can do that at higher and higher levels, the galactic core and so forth. So I think we have tremendous ability. And as we move forward in breaking through some of these barriers, what that will enable us to do, those at the cutting edge, such as yourself and others working in this field, we'll be able to move forward more quickly into these newer areas where we can bring more and more information, more knowledge, more wisdom to the planet, to humanity, so that humanity can then evolve to what it's supposed to be and realize its fullest potential.
Wonderful, wonderful point. And that's really interesting because the incredible and the most brilliant aspect of that, of what you just stated, is the fact that when you have access to that type of information and knowledge, there can be no misinformation there because you're accessing the information as it is and you're accessing the, let's say, when you have misinformation, you're accessing copies that have been convoluted. Well, this is the original, and there's no convolution, there's no distortion, nothing in there that gives us misinformation, and that's going to be the brilliant aspect of all this. We have actually surpassed the time, and it's not a problem because, like I mentioned to you before the show, is we didn't have a show following, so the wonderful people at BBS Radio allow us to go on if the conversation goes on. However, I don't want to tire you because I know I want you to come back for a little bit more focus on the extraterrestrial and the other paper that you wrote about how they're helping us in this process of ascension, which is very much in relation to what we discuss in the radio show. So I'd like to invite you back. Is there anything else that you feel you would like to mention to the audience before we call it a night, or you're good?
I think I'd just repeat again that if anyone wants to help this exopolitics movement become more informed about what is going on, that they just subscribe to the news list, the Facebook pages, the Twitter pages, get the information and just share it with their friends and let others know, because that's how the change is going to happen. It's just because people become interested and that they tell others, and so it spreads through word of mouth. And that's really what it requires. So everyone that's listening to this, you have a really important role to play. Just believe that you can make a difference by learning about the information, sharing it with friends and family, and that's how you can help the world change. And without you, all of us doing all this work, we're not going to get anywhere. So really do require the listener to help. And I want to thank you, Esperanza, for making this possible and inviting me on your show.
Well, no problem. Like I said, you're welcome to come anytime as a guest, because I think this is a very important topic. And I have to tell you, honestly, when I heard the word exopolitics, politics is not something that I like, politics in general. But then when I realized it had to do with extraterrestrial, I'm like, oh, well, I need to know more about this, because I realized that I was very ignorant on the topic. And I always considered myself a fairly knowledgeable person, or at least well-rounded. And here was a new topic that I was not familiar with, and I just need to know. I also wanted to mention to the audience that another way that you can help Michael's work is by buying his books. Not only will you be helping his work, but also getting a lot of wonderful, excellent information like the exopolitics, political implications of extraterrestrial presence. And I think you have four other books. Is that correct, Michael?
Yes, about two of them deal with exopolitics, my most recent two, and the other one is exposing U.S. government policy on extraterrestrial life.
So the more we understand about all these things, the more effective we can work to improving these situations.
Exactly.
Great. Thank you so much. And next week, just wanted to mention to our listeners, Michael's wife, Angelica Wycliffe, is going to be talking to us on a completely different subject. This one's going to be more on, I guess I could say, healing aspect, but it really has to do with this incredible gentleman from Croatia, Angelica has facilitated in bringing to the United States, and he's going to be traveling through different parts of the country. He's going to be in Los Angeles in November and in Chicago and also New York. So we'll be talking about that, so that if you're able to go to one of these events, you will be impressed, because I've been in this spiritual business for 30 years, and I have never experienced anything quite like this person, Brazo. And you can read more about him on brazo.net. So, Michael, we hope to have you again on the show. Thank you so much for sharing the wonderful information that you provided for our audience. And like I said, I'm sure that my audience and I would love to have you back again to share more information.
Thank you, Esperanza. I'd love to come back.
All right, great. All right, well, this is have a wonderful week, everyone, and especially the East Coast. Be careful. I'm glad. I knew that for some reason the show was going to be going on, and I was glad that it was. We are still having quite a serious storm, but God willing, we're safe, and that's the important thing. So be safe as well, and God bless all of you. Have a wonderful week.